What's up, everybody? It's the Sox Talk on the air at SoxTalk.com. I'm Mario Squeeze coming to you from Chicago. And west, on the west coast, is Jason Gage, who is not going to be starting any fights today.
Come on, I got a mean left hook. As long as I can sucker punch you.
Not from that far away.
Hey, you'd be surprised. I'm like Stretch Armstrong over here.
I just see your hand in the window right now. Son of a bitch.
No, I'm actually knocking on the door. I'm polite. I'm going to grab me some pasta first.
We got some leftovers.
You always do. But welcome back. It's good to be back. It's rainy out here in California. I'm sure it's beautiful still.
Oh, it's beautiful sunny out Illinois. Here. It's going to be sunny here all day. It's going to be sunnier for the next couple days. And it's good because last week or a little over a week ago, the weather was so shitty over here. It was raining every single day. So it's about time we people in Chicago get weather we deserve and you people get the crap that you deserve. So speaking of the White Sox, they've been kind of playing like crap. But not really, because 4-3 is still a pretty good week. Just not for them.
Yeah, it's another mediocre week, and it's a week we are not in first place.
Yes.
And we have the third best record in baseball behind Detroit, the pesky Detroit Tigers, and the St. Louis Cardinals.
But before you go on, I just got to bring this up. While we are not in first place, there is one team that is in first place. And I'm going to see if you can guess who.
I know who. It's the Colorado Rockies.
Yes.
Have regained first place over
back.
The Arizona Diamondbacks.
They are back. Always do, they came right back.
So when am I going to get my rainbow shirt in the mail then to wear for this whole contest?
Oh, we still got a ways to go. We still got a few months to go. But I just want to update everybody because I know there's people on Sox Talk. They're dying. They're dying to keep track of this stuff. So, you know. Just got to remind people.
I think at season's end, you're going to see everyone with signatures. Like, they're going to have the countdown numbers for the White Sox in small print. And then you're going to have, like, the countdown numbers for the Rockies in, like, huge font. It's going to be, like, 2. And this will be, like, 2 months before the season ends, and I'm just going to be screwed.
But going back to that Cubs series, we got to talk about the fight. Even though everybody's talking about it, how many times have you seen the punch? How many times have you seen that little cheap shot?
Too many times. What I haven't seen enough of is the punches thrown by Tadahito Higuchi. Hits 2 home runs, knocks in 6, all while Freddy Garcia throws 8 shutout innings of baseball.
You know, and I heard,
and then AJ got hit in the face with a fist.
You know, going with Higuchi, I heard some people were saying, here's this guy who all last year, he really didn't give much credit. Sox fans gave him credit, Azeguin gave him a lot of credit, but really, outside of that, he really never got much attention, just a solid ball player. Then he finally has probably the biggest game in terms of RBIs, hitting 2 home runs, in his career in the major leagues, and is overshadowed by a damn fight. And Garcia was also overshadowed because, he threw 8 innings, picked up his, 7th win? So two unbelievable games, 2 great performances by Sox players, and it was overshadowed by the fight.
So what did you think about the fight?
It was awesome.
Because I know...
I wasn't able to watch it live. I wasn't able to watch it live, but as soon as I heard that the fight happened, I freaking took off, went home, put it on. Luckily, it was. I have DVR, so I was able just to go back on it and watch it. It was a hell of a fight. Because you don't see many good shots like that. You know, even though it was kind of a cheap shot, you don't see many fights have a good shot to the face like that.
Yeah, plus it wasn't all rigged like a boxing match, you know?
Rigged?
Yeah, boxing. What a phony sport that is.
Ah.
But this was real boxing.
I think what made it great is that it was so unexpected.
Real?
I mean, when you look, usually most fights happen when a guy gets hit by a pitch. So you could almost see it. The guy gets hit by a pitch. You could kind of believe, you know what? This guy may charge the mound. He may get pissed off. But in this case, it was a collision at the plate. I know you couldn't expect a fight to stem from that.
I don't think you could have. I didn't see the play live. I had phone calls. I was working on a freaking school project because... Well, starting next week, we will have 2 college graduates on the air. 2. So mail all your gifts and well wishes to me, courtesy of Mario Scalise, just drop him off. He lives right next to US Cellular.
Did you graduate because of luck, like me?
Oh, I'm graduating with high honors.
Oh. Nothing wrong with a 2.5, though.
No, you got your degree, didn't you?
I got it. That's all that
And you
matters.
have a fantastic job on Mondays getting to work with me.
That, you know, that's what I went to school for. I always said if I get a chance to work with Jason Gage again, I got to take that opportunity. Going back to the fight, though, I think we both agree, as do 90% of the people, and most of those people actually have a brain when it comes to baseball. Pruszynski wasn't at fault at all in this.
He wasn't?
He wasn't at fault. This was a clear shot. I mean, it was a good hit, legit hit. It was Barrett overreacting, right?
Come on, everyone knows there's an unwritten rule in baseball, you can't take out the catcher. Oh, wait. I'm not Rich Hill. Sorry about that. I apologize. He's just a triple-A shit, according to Ozzie Guillen.
And what was great is ChicagoSports.com, which is a site for the Tribune. They have the, I don't know if you saw the War of the Words they had in the little top right hand section. It had Rich Hill's comment. It had the comment from Rich Hill. Then it said, you know, Rich Hill said it, and then it had the comment from Ozzie Guillen. But it didn't say Ozzie Guillen said it. It said, guess who? You know, it said, you know, tell that piece of shit or whatever, you know, he doesn't know the game or whatever he said. And then it just said, guess who? As if, you know, it was Ozzie Guillen who said that. And Ozzie Guillen's the only type of person who could say that
Yeah, and get away with it.
and get away with it, most importantly. But what really, talking about Rich Hill's comment, it was funny because here's Rich Hill talking about it being a cheap shot. And then you have, you know, Michael Barrett initially saying that, you know, he didn't have the ball. Pruszynski shouldn't have done it. But then Baker pretty much said, you know what, it was a good shot, it was a clean shot. You kind of wonder, when it comes to Baker, even though he was right in saying that, he was also wrong because he probably should have been sticking up for his teammates, for his team, for his players.
Remember, Ozzie Guillen stood up for Torrey Hunter. No, wait. Yeah, he
He
did stand
did.
up for Torrey
He
Hunter
stood up
2 years
for Torrey Hunter
ago.
against, which was a sh it was a plate to plate
Jamie
against
Burke.
Burke, against Jamie Burke.
He stood up for that. I mean, if it's a good baseball, clean baseball play, I don't think there's anything you can do. You can still retaliate, and I mean, I guess you can make a point that the Cubs needed some spark. Michael Barrett had said prior on an interview with the Score that the team needed to get in a fight. So I think Barrett was kind of looking for it and got it, and
I didn't know he
happened to
said
hit
that.
AJ's jaw. Yeah.
That's a
And I think that's
very
going to make suspension heavier. And there are reported suspensions out, all these rumors of stuff, but nothing is official as of yet.
But as far as Barrett goes, you would have to think he would get about, what, 10,
10
15
days.
games?
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go as far as 15, but I would think 10 games. And I think Brian Anderson's going to get 5 or 6.
Yeah, and Anderson will
I mean,
probably get about
he
5,
was a
6. I
15.
think him, yeah, him and Mabry will probably get the same thing. I think maybe Anderson might get more because he got that shot in on Barrett. I mean,
Oh,
he
yeah,
actually
he knocked
connected on a
Barrett.
punch. So he might get a little bit more. What about Pitsednik? I think in his case he might be in the clear
Defense.
for the fact, yeah, that he was just more or less trying to, you know, pretty much take him down to cool things off. But at the same time, he did take him down, and he seemed like he tried to get him in a headlock.
Hey, he did what he could to prevent that.
It was funny watching him do it though, because I mean, Pathetic is not a big guy. You know, he's just a left-handed lead, you know, lead off left fielder. He's a leadoff hitter. He's a small guy facing a guy like Barrett, who's a pretty decent sized guy with all the equipment. It was funny trying to see him try to take him down and just try to hold him. You know what I mean? Not try to swing, not to try to get hit, just kind of hold him. It was pretty funny,
Yeah.
watching that.
All while Brian Anderson comes just running down the first baseline, just swinging left and right
Was he
at Mabry,
venting?
who's playing slappies. He could have been, but he's sticking up for his teammates, and you got to respect that.
But I could
Just
see.
like I have no problem with Michael Barrett or even Rich Hill saying what he did, because when you're on the other side of the argument or the other side of the table, you got to be doing things to try to help your Cubs, and the Cubs are pathetic right now. They're a futile ball club, and they were lucky to get a win in
Yeah,
game
it
three,
was
which we'll
really.
talk about in a minute or two. But I want to go back and talk about Mark Burley's performance in game one. He gave up two hits in a complete game domination, where the only run was an unearned run that was scored in the first
I
inning.
believe he had what? I know he gave up the first hit of the game. It was Juan Pierre's
Pierre
single,
infield swinging
infield.
bunt
Yeah.
type of hit.
After that, I believe he had what, 5 innings, maybe 5 or 6 innings, no hits. completely shut him down afterwards.
Yeah, and then there was like a little drooper that went in between the second and short and center fielder.
Yeah,
That
so
was
he
the
was pretty,
second
and he's
hit.
really been on his game ever since that first inning in Minnesota, last week,
When he gave
or
up seven.
yeah, when he gave up 7 runs. He's been, since then, if he was tipping his pitches that inning, perhaps he was, but if he obviously has figured it out, and he's been lights out. Granted, it is against the Cubs offense that.
Cannot hit left-handed pitching at all. I think their team average against left-handed pitching was about 190, and then Burley dropped it to like 182. I'm telling you, this is a bad Cubs team we played, and we took care of business in 2 games, but I'm not impressed with the way the White Sox are playing. A bigger issue has kind of shown up, and our defense and our play has been lackadaisical. We lost the game against Tampa Bay because of bad defense. I'm not saying we would have won the game with better defense because we would have still had to score runs on Scott Kazmir, but the team was able to show life later on in that game against a terrible, Devil Ray bullpen,
And you know
but
what?
all our
But
defensive blunders
this goes
failed.
back to last year. Last year, the Sox had such a good defense where they always kept themselves in the game. So it's not like the defense necessarily gave them a lead, but the defense that they played last year kept them in ball games. If they played solid defense in that game against Kashmir, later in the game, maybe they pull off that win.
And then you have Friday with Burley's start. We give up an unearned run, but the defense played pretty solid the rest of the way. And then Sunday, it disappeared. Sunday, we had two of the best pitchers in baseball, in my mind. I think Zambrano is
Yes.
as talented as anyone in the game. He's just 24 years old.
Yeah, in
He's
terms of just
the
stuff,
stud.
in terms of just stuff, yeah, it was some of the better stuff in the game.
And then you had the return of our ace and the best pitcher in the American League to date. In Jose Contreras, and Contreras was filthy. His command of the splitter wasn't exactly there, but his fastball was there.
Yeah.
It was beautiful. And you had just a pitcher's duel going on, aside from the fact that the wind was carrying, the ball was really carrying today, or Sunday, I should say. And you had Aramis Ramirez hit two. How the hell he hit the balls out of the park, I have no idea. He hit two terrible pitches out. One of them would have hit the dirt about 2 feet in off the plate.
Yeah, the first one was just a missile. I mean, you knew he hit it hard, you just didn't know if it was going to be, high enough to get out over, That was just a missile. Interesting piece of hitting.
Yeah, both of them were interesting. He looked more like Vlad Guerrero than he did Aramis Ramirez. And then you had Paul Konerko clubbing two solo shots. AJ Pierzynski then hits one at dead center field to give the Sox the lead. No, he tied it up at three. Take that back.
Yeah, and that
No,
kind of
AJ's was to give him the lead. I apologize, people.
yes, and that kind of started off a whole
Incident.
another incident.
Yeah.
And this is it's really hard to say what happened because the camera angles don't show that they don't show AJ Pierzynski rounding the bases. They show him coming home, but they don't show him rounding the bases. Apparently, he was slapping his hands together, and then
You know
obviously.
how AJ does his clap?
Yes, I think maybe I think Zambrano noticed that, and maybe that kind of pissed him off a bit. But then after, when Brzezinski scored, what does he do? The little finger up in the air type thing, which Zambrano usually does. And I know Brzezinski after the game, I believe he was telling reporters that's totally different. That's something that happened off the field a few days ago that I don't want to talk about. It's not what you think, and I wasn't showing up. Whatever. But that might just be an excuse for him because you could see a Pierzynski doing that in that situation because he doesn't do that. He never does that.
Well, I do remember in Anaheim or Los Angeles, where the fans love him so much. During the playoff games, one of those games, Pierzynski hit a home run, and he came back and he totally toned to the fans, and it was amazing. I was laughing. This is why we got AJ Pierzynski. He is a prick to anyone that's not a Sox fan or on the Sox. And that is what the Sox need. Guys with attitude. Guys that could win games.
Yeah.
It's what we lacked under Jerry Manuel. It's what we lacked the first year under Ozzie Guillen. And now we have in AJ Pierzynski. The guy has brought this team together. And he has an attitude. And he gets under the opposition's skin. And I'm glad
Yeah.
we have him signed to an extension.
I'm usually against the whole, because really, whenever you do something like that, it's showing up, it's showing up the pitcher. But in Zambrano's case, Zambrano's usually a guy who shows up the hitter, and he usually
Yeah,
does
so.
because hitters are usually the ones showing up to pitchers. They're the ones usually hitting the home runs and standing at the plate for 20 seconds before they start moving to first base. So Zambrano actually doing all that show off stuff, I don't mind it because you don't see many pitchers doing it, and you see way too many hitters doing it. But at the same time, Pruszynski doing it, I got no problem with it either because he's doing it to a guy who does it to the hitters he strikes out or to the ground outs or fly outs or whatever. He usually does that at the end of the inning when he gets that final out. So I got no problem with it. It's a fair game.
Yeah, I think we all know Zambrano. My take on Zambrano is the same take as it is on Jose Lima. If I were a batter, the bat would accidentally come out of my hands and come near them, because I think it's disrespectful the way those two clowns show up people on the mound. Now, I happen to think Zambrano is also one of the best pitchers
See,
in the game.
I don't agree with that though, and the reason I don't agree with that is you have more hitters than pitchers in baseball who do that home run crap.
Then throw at the hitter that does
Yeah,
that.
I agree.
I don't
I
got a
definitely agree.
problem with that.
Now with Jose Lima, my problem with Jose Lima is that he does that and he's not very good. Don't do that when you're not very good.
He was good a long time ago,
But
but
he
he's not
still
playing
does it
baseball
and he's
anymore.
bad. He still did it with the Royals and he was bad. If you're not a good pitcher, don't do any of that crap. And really, when he had that one good year, didn't it kind of come out of nowhere?
No, he was solid for a couple year span, and he did good in Los Angeles late in his career. But more importantly, and away from these pitchers that I dislike, we need to talk about the reemergence, because last week we talked about how the starting pitching had failed. This week the starting pitching seemed to come around. We had Jose Contreras back, and he pitched fantastic. He looks just like he used to.
Garland had a better
We had,
performance.
yes, against Tampa Bay. Then you had Burley, who went on from what he did after the first inning, which
Against the
makes you think
Twins.
maybe he was really tipping pitches. And Burley said he's been feeling very good on the mound.
Yeah.
And Vasquez, well, he had another one of those games where it looked in command and in control, and then it went away. So we can see if he can start rebuilding on things. But in general, our bullpen is, our rotation is coming up, but our defense has been failing them, and we've had what could have been a better week. But now we're going to take a break, come back. We're going to talk a little bit about some news. The clown is going to be departing Chicago. And then we're going to talk about the big skirt coming back. The big hurt coming back to town. And our feelings on that. The typical Mario sigh. We'll end it with that, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Want your baseball fix on demand?
I want that!
Plug into the hottest big league talk radio on the web, Outsider Radio.
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then again the following Sunday night. That will be the program.
Join host Brandon Rossage as things get loud.
Should Bud Selig suspend Barry Bonds? Everybody else is saying they should throw caution to the wind and just forget about it and make a statement. I don't think you should do that, and I don't think it's necessary. With this media juggernaut, Barry Bonds is going to get what's coming to him. Bud Selig can spare everybody some time and let the thing take its course. This thing, if this is true, it's the end of his career.
It's original grassroots baseball analysis ready for your ears on your time every single day.
We're going to get into the first pitch now, wrap up some of yesterday's action, and get into today's action. It's five topics in 5 minutes. Basically, the scoreboard coming right at you.
Don't miss a pitch. Get interactive and get plugged into Outsider Radio on the web's premier sports podcast network, 360thepitch.com.
Welcome back to Sox Talk on the Air, the official podcast of SoxTalk.com. Before I get into talking to you about the rest of the show, I want to tell you a little bit about some other sites. You have TalkBears.com, TalkBeehawks.com, TalkBulls.com, and 360ThePitch.com. Three of them, the best interactive sports fan sites on the web. One of them, the best interactive fan radio site on the web with analysis from guys like Mario, someone named Jeff Shipley.
Analysis.
Their show is not really analysis, it's more humor. And then you have a guy like Brandon Rossage, who they call Liar, who does four baseball shows a week. And you have Simon Says, who I horribly pitched and plugged about the first show we ever did, saying he was just a handicapper for horse racing. Turns out I was right, and that's all he does anymore. But if you want to do that, he's not quite Dr. Phil, but he can give you advice on how to win some money, if you like winning money.
If you're
and I don't know
racing.
The rest of their shows. I think there's something called The Cheap Sheets, which is a baseball show,
yes.
And Mario could probably give you more on that.
Yes. No, it is The Cheap Seats Radio. It's a weekly show. They come out over the weekend, and it's usually about an hour and a half, 2 hours, and it's just straight baseball. And those guys are actually based in Birmingham, so they're very familiar with the Barons. I guess they catch a lot of Barons games. They talk to some Barons players here and there, some coaches and stuff like that. So they're very familiar with the Barons and the Sox minor league system. But they are a general baseball show.
Ah, interesting to hear. I may have to get them on because I would be doing occasional FutureSox.com podcasts.
Yes.
Talking about our minor league players.
I thought you were going to say that.
Because I was going to do that. I was going to do that with you, Mario. But then I realized I had to find someone else.
Because
I would say players' names, and you just wouldn't know who I was talking about.
I don't know much about the minor. I know a little bit, very little about the Sox minor league. You know, based on, if we go down to spring training and I catch a couple of guys, but I really don't follow them too much after that. So if you were to tell me a player right now, their numbers, how they're doing, I really wouldn't know too much about it. So it is best for you to go and try to find somebody else. Yeah.
But what is your take on our top prospect, Joe Boo?
Joe who?
No, I'm just screwing with you. Joe Boo, you remember? He was the guy that Serrano prayed to in Major League.
Oh, Joe prospect. Boo. That's, what's his name?
Serrano?
Serrano on a bat, right? Right? Yes.
You're a little, I'm going to let silence take the place of your comments right there.
Now, we're doing this through Skype, which is more or less like an interphone thing. And right when I called you, or you actually called me today to kind of start getting ready for the show, the first thing we started talking about was center field and game three against the Cubs and Rob Mikhovyak and how Brian Anderson wasn't out there and how we were going to talk about it in the last segment, but we ended up skipping it. Actually, you ended up skipping it. We ended up taking a break, but we got to talk about it now. Because we obviously have a difference of opinions here. You,
yeah.
Jason Gage, believe that Brian Anderson should have been out there in the eighth inning because he would have caught that ball hit off the bat of Michael Barrett. He would have caught the ball. The ball wouldn't have dropped. He wouldn't have got a triple. The run wouldn't have scored. The Sox maybe leave game three with the win.
Well, first, we got to make sure that it starts with Juan Uribe completing that double play. And I'm not one to blame errors on losses. But mistakes are part of the game, and they happen to, cause a lot of this trouble. I can't say what would have happened in the eighth inning and what would have happened in the ninth inning had they made these plays. But first off, Uribe, that was a routine double play. Second off, I've long said on the show Rob Mikhovyak cannot be an everyday center fielder, regardless of how he hits, because he is an atrocious defensive center fielder. And it's not a knock on him. He's a utility player. He can play third base, he can play right field, he can play left field, and he can occasionally play center field. However, we're winning a ball game. We should have our best defensive player out there in the eighth inning because it's all about defensive positioning at that point. We could care less if we score more runs. If we play defense and pitch, we're going to win that ball game. And I'm not going to say Brian Anderson makes that catch 100% certain. Although I'm pretty sure he did. I had it recorded the game, and I watched the play a couple of times, and I'm convinced, looking at the route that Rob Mikhovyak, it looked like he was going to pick up a Sunday at McDonald's and then going to make the catch. He looked like Carl Everett out there. And then you have Brian Anderson, who is one of the top center fielders in the American League and one of the top in baseball defensively.
I'm going to say this. I'm going to agree with you on the point that Anderson should have been out there, and I think, Guillen, I don't know if you've heard, but Guillen said he puts the loss on him. He believes he screwed up that game, and he lost the game for his team. And I think he might have been talking about that. Maybe he felt, looking back at it, that Anderson should have been in center field. Maybe Anderson makes that play. I don't know. I don't know if he could have been second-guessing himself as far as bringing in Neil Kotz, because I think bringing in Neil Kotz was the right move there. So I don't know if he was really second-guessing himself there.
Neil Kotz made the pitches to get out of the inning.
But
and then he had a mental pass capacity, but he still gave up all those runs.
I know. And it is Neil Kotz's fault. But I'm going to say this. When that ball was hit by Michael Barrett, I didn't know who was in center field. I know Mikoviak was playing, but I didn't know if Anderson was out there or not. And I'm being honest, when the ball was hit, I thought that was going to be in the gap no matter what. I didn't think that there was going to be a play there. That was just for me watching the game. As soon as the ball was hit, I thought that was going to drop at least.
Like I said, I'm 80-70% confident Anderson makes that catch, but I'm 100% confident Anderson cuts that ball off. All I had to do was watch those replays a couple of times, and I saw Mikoviak's route that was who the hell knows where he was going first before going to that ball. And I've seen enough around Mikoviak in the field, and I've seen a lot of Brian Anderson to know there is a big difference in the range those two guys cover. And I think you're dead on Ozzie's comments. I think he knows that if Anderson's out there, that play is made or at least cut off at the very minimum. And I'm not putting any of this blame.
I don't think the play is made. I think that the chance that play is made is small, even with Anderson out there. I do agree with you that I think Anderson had a greater chance of at least cutting that ball off. But even so, even if he cuts off, that doesn't really stop anything. That doesn't stop the inning from happening. The inning keeps on continuing. It's still a hit. That's where I'm, more or less where I'm coming from.
See, I don't think it would have been a hit. Regardless, I'm not one to put blame on these type of situations.
No.
The team could have still overcame them. You have to overcome your mistakes if you make them. And Neil Kotz would have to overcome the defense's mistakes. He didn't do so. So there was a lot of people that could have stepped up.
And even early in the game, Creedy made an error. Paul Konerko made an error. This is just, the plays like this just extended the inning for a guy like Contreras. So instead of Contreras maybe pitching through that eighth inning, he's getting pulled out. You have plays like that. I believe in the bottom of the eighth inning, Creedy grounded into a double play with the man at first base to start off the inning. Because I believe Przinski, or no, was it the ninth inning? The Sox start off the inning with the leadoff man, and Creedy grounded into a double play. So, I mean, there are a lot of little things that the Sox kind of screwed up on yesterday. It wasn't just that one play.
That's my problem. It's been a growing trend as we've struggled. We have not played good baseball. And we need to get back to good baseball. And I'm going to have a little closing point here. And that's the fact that if you make errors, it's not necessary. I'm not going to ever blame a loss on one player. Because we have nine other guys out there, eight other guys out there that can step up and overcome those mistakes and do something to make up for that. That's all about what baseball's about. It's picking up other guys. Yeah. If for some reason you have a runner on third, less than two outs, and you don't get him home, the next guy's going to have to come up with a clutch base hit and pick the other guy up. Good teams feed off each other and they pick up each other's mistakes so they don't show up as much. They're not as glaring. The White Sox have not done that as of late, and they've built upon other people's mistakes, it seems like. When one error comes, so do the rest. And I guess it started in Minnesota when we had a pretty atrocious defensive game, and it's carried on from there, and we were typically one of the best defensive teams, and we have not been that.
Well, I still think the Sox have a good defense, even though they're playing bad. I just think that's how much potential this defense has. I think when you look at the left side, you look at Iguchi, you look at Anderson in center field, and Dyan right, and Konerko at first, I think they still have a good defense, but they're still not playing up to their capabilities. And I guess that's kind of a good thing, because even though they're not playing up to their capabilities, they still have the third best record in baseball. One went away from having, the best record in baseball. They're not in bad shape at all. I mean, I think there's definitely some concerns. Once again, their defense is having some problems, and their bullpen has some issues, but I think things could be a hell of a lot worse.
Oh, they could be.
And
we have not played good, so it's still a decent thing that we're in a good situation here.
And with the bullpen, it's been kind of shady all year. Boone Logan, one guy in particular who has been
No, we call him the clown because he looks like a clown on the mound. This is not even commenting on his pitching, but I can't be the only one that notices the guy looks like a clown on the mound with his like size 16 shoes that look like clown shoes.
But that game, that relief appearance he had in Tampa Bay, he made four mistakes. Let's just run it down. First, he made the throwing error. Then on a ball hit.
First, he decided to become a major league pitcher. That was the first mistake he's made.
I don't like when people take shots at people when they're down. Not really a fan of that. I like taking shots at people who are up. Okay? When people who are down, don't take shots at them.
Way to make me feel guilty.
Now, what I'm saying with Boone Logan is in that game, let's just run it down again. First, he made the throwing error. Then he didn't cover first base. Then on a bunt down the third baseline, he charges it aggressively. Creedy comes in and then he just walks away. Then in a chopper over his head, instead of letting Juan Uribe take it and make a nice, not an easy play, but get the out, he tries to take it himself. He made four plays, and what was funny is the next day, you had Don Cooper on TV saying he made every possible mistake you can make on the mound yesterday. You know, and he said it, you know, jokingly, but he was being honest. He made every single mistake that you could make as a pitcher on the mound, it seemed.
Yeah, and I'm not going to slam Boone Logan, even though I just did. But I think he proved he's not ready for the major leagues. He's obviously, it's evident that never pitching above A ball. Basically, he's not ready.
I said this in the beginning of the season. I said it shortly after again. I don't think that he's a major league caliber reliever. The only reason I like bringing him up is that he had the hot hand. And I would be absolutely shocked if we've seen Boone Logan ever in the major leagues again. I would be really shocked. I just don't think he has it. I think he was hot, and I think he used the hot hand. And considering he was never anything and he was a single-A player, you bring him up and you hope he does good. But if he doesn't, you send him down, and we're not going to see him again. I would be shocked if he came up and he pitched again this year or any other year at the major league level.
I think you may find out that you'll be pleasantly surprised because he is going to go down to the minors. And he does have a ball that misses the barrel of the bat, but he needs to get some consistent work in, and he needs to just develop. He hadn't developed. He got thrown into the fire, and I'm not blaming anyone for that because he did pitch his butt off, and we didn't have another lefty, and then we traded for Thornton so late in the year, who I became a big Thornton fan.
He's looking better and better when he gets out there. I feel a little bit more comfortable with him. Seems like he's finding his strike zone a little bit more. He's got tremendous power in that fastball. And for a lefty reliever, especially a second one out of the bullpen, it's great to have.
Oh, completely agree with you. And he's even said this is the first manager that's really gotten him confident on the mound. And you can see it when Thornton goes out there. He has some confidence in him.
Now, you know, going on, you know, we kind of wrap up last week. That week's done. The coming weeks, you know, obviously Thomas is coming to town. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But really, when you look at the big picture, when you look at them, they're hosting Oakland, 500 team. Toronto, then they go to Toronto, 500 team. They go to Cleveland, 500 team. Texas, Detroit, Cleveland, Texas, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Houston. These are the series, the teams, the cities that they will be playing over the next month until June 27th. Every single one of these games from here through June 27th will be against a team that's above 500 currently. That's a huge, huge stretch for this team. Especially, we just talked about it, their defense isn't really playing up to their capabilities. Their bullpen has some problems. This is a huge, huge month for them.
It's going to be a time where they're going to have to step up and prove that this team is good. We know they were good last year, but this is another year, and we cannot continue to base things on last year. We're in a good position, but we failed to take care of business against poor teams as of late, and a 4-3 record is not taking care of business. These are series that we should have been taking 2 out of 3 minimum each time, and in the Cubs' standpoint, we should have swept because they are playing that bad.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be big, especially when you have, you know, the Tigers series not too far away. I think if they could have some, you know, pick up some wins and kind of at least get into that series where they're right at them, they might be able to not bury them, because even if they were to sweep the Tigers, you know, they would probably only be, you know, 3-4 games up. But really kicking their ass in that series, it could send a nice little message to them. Especially then you got the Indians surrounding those series too. You know, the Indians, I'm sure they're going to take this series against the Sox as a way for them to maybe get some momentum, get going. If the Sox are kind of, you know, beat them around too, especially, you know, with the Indians being still a relatively young team, that could kind of have them losing their confidence a little bit.
Yeah, those divisional games are going to be key. And I mean, I don't know how to say it. When we're not playing good, they're going to have to start building upon things against good teams. And this team is capable of running off a lot of wins against these type of teams if it gets going, if the pitching stays consistent.
You know what? And I definitely see them doing that. I don't see them falling off in this next month. I think what makes it interesting, and we talked about this last week, they haven't faced many good teams. They faced the Tigers. You know, that's basically it. That's really the only team that they faced. They faced Toronto one series, and the Indians obviously are a threat, but that was early in the year when they haven't started off too good. They haven't faced many good teams, and now they are. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how they face the Rangers. The Rangers are usually a team that gives them problems with their bats. It'll be interesting to see how this rotation holds up against them.
Well, speaking of good teams, let's talk about a good player. He's coming back to the South Side of Chicago. He's a legend in Chicago. The greatest hitter ever to play on the South Side. The biggest oddity of a great player to ever play on the South Side as well, because he was all over the place emotionally and he had all his contract issues, all his whining, all his issues in the clubhouse. The big confrontation between him and Ken Williams this offseason. I'm talking about the big hurt Frank Thomas. He's a legend in many Sox fans' eyes. He, for a certain period of time, the greatest hitter ever to play the game, potentially. He was right there with Ted Williams, the Ruth.
Yep.
Obviously, you have Barry Bonds now and the whole roided speculation. We can't go into that with Bonds. But Big Frank was a legend with the bat. And he's rejoining the team. Well, he's rejoining, coming back to Chicago. He's not rejoining the Sox. I don't think he'd ever be invited back to a White Sox.
In his uniform, he will be here for the next 3 days, Oakland against the Sox. It's going to be a mixed – I would think it's going to be a mixed crowd. It's going to be a mixed response.
I think you're going to hear boos, just like Jim Tomey heard boos in Cleveland, but I don't think it's going to be to that extent. I do think the fans in Chicago are going to make the mistake of giving this man a standing ovation. I love Frank Thomas, but I'm not going to get past the quotes he made this past offseason where he said, had he known the White Sox weren't going to bring him back, he would have not thrown out that first pitch at either the World Series or the ALCS, one of those playoff games. He would not have thrown that off. That just shows me right there what kind of man Frank Thomas was, and that's not the type of person that I will ever cheer. I like great play. Frank Thomas was a great player for a long time. But he was a selfish player for a long time at the end of his career in the South Side. He was all about the home runs, just as he's all about the home runs now in Oakland, where he's batting 178 with 7 home runs and 20 RBIs. However, he is projected to hit 30 home runs with 90 RBIs. And you statisticians out there will probably tell me that he's still a very valuable player, despite a freaking 178 batting average. But he's not. He's selfish. Selfish, selfish. He shows it in his attitude, and he happens to be in an Oakland clubhouse that's very good. But Frank Thomas would not get one freaking clap out of me if I were at that stadium because of his selfish remarks and his selfish attitude over the years in Chicago. And I'm not saying he prevented other playoff wins, but he definitely wasn't helping them in the attitude level. Because it was all shown last year that winning teams need good attitude. They need leaders. No matter how talented you are, you need that to finish. Because we had a lot of teams in Chicago recently under Jerry Manuel that could have made a lot of noise that didn't. We had teams back in the early 90s that could have made a lot of noise and didn't. Now, I'm not putting Frank on the spot for that because I think there was a lot of other situations there. But he was not contributing and helping the cause. He was with his bat, but that was the only thing he ever helped the cause with.
I figured since you did the silence to me, I would do a silence to you. God, this is so freaking hard because I don't know if I completely agree with you as far as the attitude thing. I think Thomas is a guy in his career where he's been more or less misunderstood, even though that's kind of a sappy thing to say. I think he has been a misunderstood guy. I don't think he's nearly as bad as some people think or make him out to be. I think his numbers were absolutely great in the career. I think early in his career, when he had guys like Ian and he had guys like Corey and he had guys like Ventura, they were pretty much the veterans in the clubhouse, and I think he was more comfortable in that situation is that he didn't have to be a vocal guy than when he would, then when obviously these guys left and he was a leader, more pressure went on him. It's really tough for me to say. If I was at the park, actually, when I'm at the park, I really don't do much clapping at all. I don't do booing. I don't clap. I don't really boo. But if I would have to actually do one or the other, I would definitely clap. I would definitely give him a standing ovation because he is one of the greatest hitters of all time. And what he did for the Sox, you can't overlook. You simply can't overlook.
So here's the question. If you're a Cubs fan and Sammy Sosa comes back, would you give him a standing ovation for the way he treated that organization the final years, walking off and leaving the game, that you know, leaving early after one of the losses? Basically,
this is what I'm going to say about
Sammy
Sosa.
Appeared.
Sammy Sosa was a jagoff from the get-go. However, and I said this at the time, the Cubs screwed Sammy Sosa in the long run. They screwed him over. He didn't screw them over.
They allowed him to be a jagoff.
What's that? They
allowed him to.
And I don't want to go into this old subject, but for years, Sammy Sosa was an absolute jagoff within an organization. He was just a bad, bad player. Horrible teammate. Yet they continually overlooked it. Why? Because he was hitting home runs and he was bringing people into the stadium because he was the only reason that people would go to that stadium. And then, as soon as they get Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor, who are the most overrated pitchers in baseball, what do? Screw you, Sosa. We don't need you anymore because we got guys who we can market. And that's really all it is on the north side. They are a team that's built around marketing. They want to make sure that they get guys who they can market. They got guys in the team they can market. Sosa was no longer a marketable guy. They dumped him. That's why. They didn't dump him because of his attitude. They dumped him because he was no longer needed from a marketing standpoint. So when it comes to Sosa, if I was a Cubs fan and he came back, I really don't want to care either way because I think in 98 or 96 and 97, whatever, you shouldn't have liked him back then.
He did have a fabulous year in 98, and
he had a great year.
A Hall of Fame career, arguably.
He had a great year. But the thing is he was a phony. Thomas has really never been a phony. Thomas has never tried to be someone that he's not. He's pretty much been a very quiet guy. He never really cared for the media attention. He just went out there and played. Sosa put on a nice little facade. And that's what I hate. You know, Albert Bell, I at least respect Albert Bell because he was a jagoff publicly. He was a pretty just straightforward guy for everything. He didn't try to go out there and put on this little facade to the media or to the public. He was what he was, and at least you respect somebody who is what he is. In Sosa's case, he wasn't. In Thomas' case, he seemed like he's been pretty much a straightforward guy throughout his whole career.
You know, I can't say that I don't agree with you. I'm surprised. When you go on long rants, I figure there's no chance I'm going to agree. But I do think you bring up some very excellent points. And I'm not saying to boo Frank Thomas. Rather,
you just won't give him a standing ovation.
Rather, I'm not going to give him an ovation. Here's a suggestion. Jim Thome, 288, 17 home runs, 41 RBIs, on pace for 65 home runs and 157 RBIs. You have Paul Konerko. You got Jermaine Dye. Here's an idea. Give each and every player of the White Sox that helped them win the World Series a standing ovation. That's playing great baseball right now, a standing ovation. Just don't even do anything when Frank's up.
Go,
it's just another at-bat.
Going to Tome, if you were in Cleveland, would you have given him a standing ovation when he returned?
You're goddamn right I would have.
But what about the terms he left on?
What, he left because Cleveland decided they didn't want to spend money on their ball club? That's why he left. They can spin it whatever way they want to. Jim Thome loves Cleveland. And if he was given the same offer from Chicago, and this is hypothetical because we traded for him, but if he was given the same offer to go to Chicago or to go to Cleveland, I guarantee you he'd be in Cleveland right now.
Wasn't he given an offer?
And it wasn't even close to the offer. This is what Cleveland
stop.
To spin it.
But this is what Thome said. Didn't Thome said that he'll stay in Cleveland? That's his place? Yet he took the money.
No, he took a lot more money. If it was a similar offer, Thome would have been in Cleveland. What, you think he's going to throw away $20, $30 million to stay in Cleveland? I think not. Not when management and ownership there was not trying to put together a winning ball club. They were in rebuilding mode. Cleveland, I mean, you got to remember that at the time when Jim Thome left. Jim Thome, one of the best character guys in baseball. How you can boo him, I have no idea. I guarantee you if he went to play in Philly, they'd give him a standing ovation. And that's coming from Philly fans.
All I'm saying is that Tomy never. And I'm not ripping Tomy because this is with every single player. But players say it's not about money, and then in the end they take the money. And that's what Tomy did. Tomy took the money in the end. Okay? I don't have any problems with it because a lot of players do it. But when you look at Thomas, remember Thomas early in his career? Didn't he sign a pretty nice contract with the Sox?
Yeah, he signed a more than fair contract with the Sox.
And then he whined and complained
as Jerry Reinsdorf didn't use the diminished skills clause for all those years that he could have used them.
I understand.
Jerry Reinsdorf treated Frank Thomas like a freaking son. And how did Thomas repay him? Last season, he finally leaves the organization, and he rips to shred Reinsdorf. Ken Williams was offended by that because Jerry Reinsdorf has went well out of his way to protect Frank Thomas on the South Side. And I thought that was pretty classless, and it showed. Now, I'm not saying Frank Thomas is a bad person. He's not. He's misunderstood, and he doesn't know how to present himself to the media. I've long said the best thing he could do in his career is keep his mouth shut the entire time. Let him say whatever the hell they want to say. Just keep his mouth shut because his mouth gets him in more trouble than anything else.
And I think you're dead on in that. I think you're dead on in that. You know, I think Guillen made a good point, too. Guillen left on horrible terms with the Sox, with the fans. And he made it clear, I believe it was at Sox Fest, he was saying, you know, a lot of times you leave on bad terms and you don't realize, you know, until a few years later. Maybe this is something Thomas will realize when he gets older.
I hope he does, because if Thomas really, you know, goes back to his days and he just basically, you know, apologizes or doesn't say anything the rest of his time, I will quickly forget that and I will give him ovations anywhere he plays. Just like if I ever see Carl Everett play in a uniform, he gets an ovation from me. Same goes for Miguel Olivo. I like the White Sox players. There's not many guys I truly dislike to play on the South Side. And
oh, a standing
those
ovation
guys that
from
I dislike,
a standing ovation for Miguel Olivo, that would be fun.
Damn right.
Because you would just see a stadium full of people and you standing up giving him a standing ovation. I like Miguel Olivo. I thought he was an extremely talented player. I don't know about a standing ovation. Standing ovation for Carl Everett, yes, because I love Carl Everett. I think he's such a fun player. His attitude, he just cracks me up. So I wouldn't mind no standing ovations for Carl Everett.
And obviously Aaron Rowan gets, you know, epic core for me since, you know, he's an alumni from the same school I'm going to be graduating from.
And then just his play in Philadelphia, and he's already loved out there, it seems. So his hard-nosed play should get the respect of really anybody who watches the game. You can't really argue with his heart.
Speaking of standing ovations and heart, Mario, you know what? This goes out to you, Mario, for putting up with all my crap on the show. 12 shows and you haven't quit.
This is 12 shows. This is show 12, right? Is it?
Yeah, 12 shows and you haven't quit. Miraculous, considering you have to put up with all my egotistical takes.
I got nothing better to do, Jace. I really got nothing better to do. But
I thought you went out of the way to do this.
You might be right. You might be right. But, you know, now that you're going to start your own little show off, you know.
It's all right. It's all right. We'll bring you on as a guest.
Yeah?
Aw. We like to humor ourselves on the show.
Have you even
if you can't laugh at each other, who can you laugh at?
Have you found yourself a co-host?
Yes.
You should. You know what? You should have a contest, like a reality show, and have, you know, who wants to be the co-host with you, and you could have, you know, like three people or something.
They have to give me things.
No, well, they could do that, but you could have something on air where you do a show, and, you know.
Oh, make them use actual skills? What, they have to earn the job instead of buy the job?
No.
This is America?
No, they go hand in hand. You know what I mean? It's a combination.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Like
either way, we could record it and make millions, right?
You record it. No, see, but here's the thing. They give you money. Now, some are going to give you more money. Some are going to give you less money. If they give you more money, they have to prove less in terms of talent, okay? If they give you less money, they have to do more in terms of talent. And then when you actually put the show together, you get a really good editor and producer to put it together to make it sound, make the show like sound really, to make it catch people's attention. And then you could sell advertising on it and make money off it. So you make money through advertising. You make money through people paying you off to be the co-host. And then maybe you get a good co-host along the way and you could do a good show. And you could do it video. So you could do it online with videos. You could get a camera and you could block these people up in a house for like a month. I think you should start a thread on SoxTalk.com and say, you know, who wants to be the co-host with me on my show? And
you
know,
you have
people respond saying, you know, I want to do it. You fly him out to California, right?
I got it. Wait. I'm not paying for that. They fly me out to wherever they are.
Okay. No. Okay. You tell them. They have to get their own airfare out to California. You have to find an apartment, though. You have to find some type of place
for them to rent.
No. They got to stay in there. You have to load up with cameras, and you have to have them stay in there.
No. I like the way you're going with this.
And then
reality radio.
Yes. And then what you could do is you could get a phone company, a cell phone company, to do it to where you could put a phone in the house and then it rings and they got to pick it up and it's you on there telling them what they got to do for that particular day. And then you could do advertising that way, you know. What's that stuff called? Placement? Product placement? You could do a lot of product placement in there, right? That you could have them all wearing Old Navy shirts the whole day, right?
I got you. Doing their song and dance?
Old Navy, yes. They wear Old Navy clothes. You have Coca-Cola all over the place, right?
You want to be the producer, don't you?
You have them drive a BMW.
Where do I get the money for that? Oh, wait. BMW is going to donate
it's
the BMW.
Product placement.
I like the way you think.
And then if the show tanks, you could just take the BMW for yourself. You take all the Old Navy clothes for yourself. You take all the pop for yourself.
You got a lot of faith in me. You actually said if. I would have said when the show tanks myself.
You have a very good following at Sox Talk. So you have the people of Sox Talk actually watch this show.
It's an interesting
Remember on Seinfeld when they were trying to make their own show and what did they say? You know, why are people going to watch it? Because it's on TV. Well, why are people going to watch this? Because it's on the internet and it's on SoxTalk.com.
Touché.
You know what I mean? And then you go find a host. You know, maybe you could have Alex, you know, Heads, whatever. He could be the host of the show.
I like the way this is going, especially if it involves less and less work for myself.
Well, you just have to find a producer.
I thought you were going to be the producer.
Oh, no, I can't produce anything.
Then you could be the director. You came up with all these ideas. I need someone to blame when it all goes wrong.
I'll be the consultant, because usually the consultant is the person who gives the ideas and then walks out of the room and doesn't really get involved. I could be the consultant.
Oh, you know what I just realized?
We're wasting
Barbaro
time.
Is a horse.
We're wasting time.
Yeah, I realized stuff. That. I was waiting for you to go somewhere with this, but I thought I was just going to let you keep kind of like walking yourself deeper into a hole. For the whole damn morning, ESPN News had something about something named Barbaro.
Yeah.
The only thing I could think of is they misspelled that Leon Barboso for the Phoenix Suns. I didn't realize it was a horse.
Yeah, the horse got hurt in the Preakness.
Yeah, see, I don't watch horse racing.
But it's funny, though. The way they talk about it is they make it seem as if it was like a human being.
Hey, pets are people, too.
I take it easy. Ugh.
You go back to eating tofu. You hear me?
Tofu. You know, the longer we go, the harder...
This is coming from the Italian that doesn't know what veal is, so I apologize.
Veal?
Animal rights people everywhere.
Ugh! All right, the longer we go, the longer it is to download. So thanks for listening. We will be back next week. Actually, we may not be back next week. We may be back the week after, unless, you know, Jason's going to do a show on his own, which is very possible. But, you know, maybe you have to just check on, you know, on practicing on getting your reality show up. But nonetheless, we'll be back sometime soon. Hopefully the Sox are in first place again, because what they're doing now is absolutely disgusting and unacceptable and unacceptable. We'll be back next week. Jason,
yes,
you must...
We should boo the White Sox every game right now. Boo.
Don't boo Frank Thomas. We'll see you next week. Say goodbye.
Later.